Subscribe to the Snooze Alarm Survivor Podcast from Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, really anywhere podcasts are distributed.
Access denied.
Except Spotify.
You will respect my authority.
Joe Thomas in the morning, fired up, yes, in the parking lot of WRHU Radio in our mobile unit here for Talkers Magazine's conference on the spoken word medium, and I appreciate you being there. Joining us from the U.S. House of Representatives and the 5th Congressional District offices representing you, he is Congressman Bob Good. Bob, good morning. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Doing well, Joe. Thanks for having me again. Hope that you're well.
I sense, and perhaps I overreact to stuff like this. Ask any of the girls I used to date in high school. I overreact to stuff like this. But you sound like you've had a tough week.
It has been a grueling week, for sure. You think about what is the primary response by the House of Representatives. It is to fund our government, to execute the power of the purse, to fulfill our responsibilities to the people who elect us as their representatives, to manage the nation's financial affairs, to ensure that we can secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, which
I've
from a federal government
before.
Standpoint is, is protecting the nation from invasion, strong national defense, protecting and ensuring, preserving our liberties, our constitutionally protected liberties, and this, what I call the Failed Responsibility Act, that was passed late Wednesday night, fails in that regard, for us to exacerbate our economic, financial, fiscal situation by passing a bill that, setting aside just for a moment, and we should and can and should debate the merits of the bill and the impact that it really does have on our nation's fiscal future. But there are two indisputable facts. One, it is an unlimited increase of debt ceiling through the end of next year. By most estimates, will take us to $35, $36 trillion in national debt, increase our national debt by about 10%. Number two, it was overwhelmingly supported by Democrats, who don't even express any concern about spending or the national debt. Republicans, who are complicit in getting us to the current $32 trillion, at least say they feel bad about it, at least say they want to address it, at least express
someday
concern about it. Someday, some of them. But for those on the Republican side who justified their vote for this bill or the negotiation of this bill, oh, it's going to be historic cuts in spending. This is just, transformational reforms. Then why would 160 something Democrats vote for it? Democrats voted 4-1 for the bill. Suddenly the Democrats have gotten sort of a fiscal religion here. They've had this conversion experience where they want historic cuts in spending, we are led to believe.
Right.
Obviously, that is not the case.
Well, let me talk about numbers with you for a second. And I don't want to sound like sports talk radio, but when the affairs of state began, most of the pundits were saying, it's going to be 30 of the Freedom Caucus. It's going to be Bob Good. It's going to be Andy Biggs. But 171 Republicans eventually joined your cause and voted against this. Is that something at least to build on as we go forward, Bob, that more, way more Republicans voted against this than were expected to?
Actually, not exactly right. It was 71 Republicans against it and 149, I think, for it. So the Republicans voted about 2-1 for it, where Democrats voted about 4-1 for it. I think it was 165 Dems, I want to say, and 46 against. I believe it was 149 Republicans for it and 71 against. So Republicans were 2-1, Democrats was a 4-1. But the Republican 2-1 even, for Democrats to have more Democrat votes than Republican votes when it's a Republican majority, and in theory at least a Republican bill, you would have had a far large, if you just looked at the merits of the bill, you would have had a far larger number of Republicans vote against it. But there was tremendous pressure from leadership to support leadership, support the speaker, support leadership, and vote for the bill. I will tell you, Joe, even earlier in the day on Wednesday, we had 29 Republicans vote against the rule. And most people outside of Congress, including myself where I got there, wouldn't know, hey, what is the rule? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, every bill that comes to the floor has a rule. It's just it's terminology is used in Congress, but it's a rule or a condition under which it comes to the floor out of the Rules Committee. And you just do not vote against the rule when you're in the majority party. In other words, even if you don't like the bill and you're going to eventually vote against the bill, you don't vote against allowing it to come to the floor under the rule that which has been voted out of the Rules Committee to, because you're essentially, sir, you're making it impossible to have the vote on the bill. You're giving control of the floor to the Democrat. You had 29 Republicans, and by the way, my friends to the West, Morgan Griffith, Ben Klein joining me and 26 others, and 29 total. That is unheard of. That was a tremendous shot across the bow, sending a message to the Republican leadership that this is such an egregious violation of our principles that we're willing to vote against the rule. That precipitated that night having 71 vote against ultimate passage to it. It has greatly strained or harmed the Republican conference in terms of, you know, our unity, if you will, because it broke the agreement under which Speaker McCarthy had negotiated ascension to the speakership, agreeing to go back to 2022 spending levels. This bill does not do that. It kept spending flat at the Biden level. We would allow regular order and amendments. We allowed no amendments to this bill in Rules Committee or from the floor. And so it is a violation of the principles under which he rose to the speakership. And combined with that, by the way, was an agreement to put a balanced budget on the floor for a vote, a 10-year balanced budget. We have not done that. I'm on the budget committee. The budget committee has been held back by leadership in doing that. This was a violation of the principles of the Republican Party, number one, because it just validates and affirms and owns the Biden agenda from a spending standpoint for the remaining 2 years of this Congress, remaining year and a half of this two-year Congress, because it keeps flat level the Biden spending from the last 2 years.
So, and I know a lot of my listeners and I have been talking about the abdication of the Senate. Chuck Schumer calling a recess appropriately so nobody says, hey, where'd the Senate go? Kevin, in my view, and I'm certainly not anywhere, you're closer to being Speaker of the House than I am. I'm not even Speaker in my own House.
I'm in the top 435 right now.
Why didn't he just say, as Nancy Pelosi has said time and time again, it's on Mitch McConnell's desk, it's off to the Senate, and it's done. You voted on it. It was passed the House. Why did Kevin McCarthy all of a sudden, was it the chance to be on the front page of the paper that he's negotiating with the president? He should have, every time anyone asked, just said, it's off to the Senate. They're on vacation. Done our part. Why didn't he do any of that?
And we worked really hard for 90 days. Number one, drafting the bill that we ultimately passed on April 25, negotiating the bill, a debt ceiling increase in the Republican House that had, again, a debt ceiling increase that we didn't want to vote for, but it had cuts and reforms that would get us on a path to fiscal solvency. We had done that work. The polls were overwhelmingly in favor of the Republican position and against the Biden position of just raise the debt ceiling with no conditions. And Biden, obviously, is a weakened president. We were in a very strong position. And our leadership talked tough for 60, 90 days up to the 11th hour. But great question. Why at the end would we surrender everything from Limit, Save, Grow? I mean, we got rid of the RAINS Act. We got rid of our H.R. 1 energy bill. We got rid of, you know, we didn't keep canceling the Biden student loan transfer scheme, the $80 billion for the IRS. We cut that down to $1 billion in this bill. We weakened tremendously the work requirements. Again, we didn't go back to pre-COVID spending. We just kept spending flat. All of those things were jettisoned or discarded from the Limit, Save, Grow bill. And instead, we passed the what I call the Failed Responsibility Act, surrendered all those positions. Why would we? And you're exactly right. Nancy Pelosi would never have done that. We should have said, we've done our work. Senate, pass our bill, or at least have a vote on our bill.
Right. They went on recess.
And pass your own bill. Pass your own bill, and then we can at least talk about it. But the Senate, you had 45 of the Republican senators sign on to their support of our bill, which meant that Schumer had no options. But then we just went ahead and negotiated against ourselves. And think about that. You pass a bill, the other folks don't like it. So now you pass another bill that they will take. I don't know. To your point.
It's been a long time.
We negotiated against ourselves and just gave them a different bill that they would pass.
It's been a long time since I read this. There was this book written by a guy from Queens named it's called The Art of the Deal. And I don't remember this chapter in there where you just give everything up.
I don't think you'll find this chapter in there unless it's a case study on what not to do.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. So does Kevin McCarthy face the vote now? Does somebody call for that vote that it was one of the things that was negotiated? Do you challenge, I don't mean you specifically, does someone challenge his position as Speaker and call for a vote? Or do you feel like Hakeem Jeffries has decided he's a good front man for us, so he'd get enough Democrat support to stay Speaker?
Well, great question. And two or three of my colleagues have expressed rumblings and concerns, suggestions to that effect, as you know, in the past week. I will say we've mostly been focused on trying to defeat the bill, trying to expose the bill, and trying to confront it. Sure. And I think we got to where we were in January for two reasons that were on full display this week. And the concern that we had with some of us had with leadership was validated by what took place this week, because the concerns come to January were that Republicans would do what we've always done in the past, which is pass major spending bills. When we have the majority, we pass these bills with primarily Democrat votes. We did that this week. Number two, we wouldn't use every tool at our disposal to fight against the radical left agenda. We didn't do that this week. So both those concerns were validated, and we find ourselves where I had predicted we would be if we stayed on the current track with projected or presumptive leadership. So how do we pick up the pieces? How do we go forward from here? How does the Democrats, when we go into the appropriations process or any future battles, how do they believe us when we say, no, we're not going to do this. No, we're going to stand strong. No, we're not going to give in. We've just had a monumental collapse here, a surrender to their agenda. Their starting position is what was passed. Their starting position was basically keep everything the same on spending and just raise the debt ceiling. And that's essentially what happened. So we go back to D.C. on Monday. It'll be an interest. We'll have our first conference meeting on Tuesday. We had unity because we were unified around standing strong together with a good bill, trying to force the Dems to take that in the Senate. And that was totally surrendered. And trust has been violated. Principles have been compromised, and even agreement for which some folks made to vote for the Speaker to rise to that position, that apparently has been transgressed. So it'll be interesting where we go from here.
Well, I know that we just had Jenny Beth
Martin.
Go ahead.
If I may add to the other part of what you said, though, why would Democrats not vote to retain a Republican Speaker when they know they're going to have a Republican Speaker? Why would they not vote to retain him when he is doing their bidding, at least as it comes to spending?
Yeah, that's my feeling is that, yeah, sure, you might lose the 71 Republicans that voted against, spend more and call it savings bill. But
one little anecdote that you'll appreciate, that going into the House vote on Wednesday, 2 days ago, I ran into a friend of mine on the Democrat side, a very friendly relationship. He's from the Commonwealth, I'll say. He's a prominent, influential Democrat from the Commonwealth. We have a friendly relationship. And I said to him, you're going to get more votes for this than we are, aren't you? You're going to have more votes for this than we are. And he said, yes, we've had to tamp down our public enthusiasm for this because as both sides have read the bill, more Democrats want to vote for it, less Republicans want to vote for it as the bill has been read by the members. Mm-hmm. And his and my prediction was right. More Democrats voted for the bill than Republicans.
Well, and speak about that for a second. So they get marching orders that say, don't sound so excited about this because that'll get maybe some Republicans to vote against it. I mean, this is the dark.
Yeah, you didn't want to. Yeah, we were already hemorrhaging Republican votes as Republicans were reading the bill and realizing what's in it.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't going to help to have Democrats express how great it was and how excited and enthusiastic that they were feigning concern. That it didn't increase spending. It doesn't really increase spending. It keeps it flat. Mm-hmm. But when you've got the highest level spending in the history of the country and you're running, $1.5 trillion deficit, more than $100 billion a month, and you're keeping all your projects, all your plussed up, all your new climate spending, all your student loan transfer schemes in there, your HR, your IRS expansions in there.
Oh, gosh.
Why wouldn't you vote for it?
What, Democrat? No money for me, Bob? I mean, hold it. Everyone else seems to be getting money. Where's my cut? I'm being facetious, everyone.
Yeah. What are you getting for this part of the debt? What are you getting for it? I think you have a hard time finding much in there for Joe.
One of your predecessors who fought a hard-fought battle to win the nomination in 2010, and by January or February of 2011, I sat down in his 5th District office, and Robert Hurt said to me, he said, this is a really dispiriting place, Joe. I mean, he hadn't even been there 6 months. He said, all we do...
You know, an observation... Yeah, go ahead.
He said, all we do is, you know, you give each other everything they want and figure out how to pay for it later. He said, this is a crazy place. This is nothing like the Virginia General Assembly. You know, we just keep spending more money and figuring out how to get it later. And he was depressed, you know, 6 months into his term. I mean, how does somebody like you keep your chin up?
You know, Joe, you get up there to D.C., right? You're trying to fight real change. You got people who they just want to spend money. You got people they just want to maintain the status quo. You got people who just want to betray the middle class, the average working American. You got people who want to trample on our freedoms, who want to grow government. And then there's the Democrats, too.
Yeah.
And so you spend all of your time battling. But, you know, I did make an observation to my colleagues in the wake of what happened this week. And I said, you know, I think – why this place, what's wrong with this place is, right, if you come in and you really battle to do, take personal risk, to courageously fight for the things that you believe the changes need to be made, you need to fight for the people who sent you here, and one of two things happens. Either you can burn yourself out from fighting every day against your own party as well as the other party, or you can conform and be transformed or institutionalized and become part of the system so that you're not fighting and battling every day so you can stay there longer.
Right.
And I think that's what you end up with, people who become institutionalized, become part of the system, because it is grueling and it is difficult to battle for change, because the system and the place is designed to prevent you from making change. And it rewards those who go along to get along, who are part of the status quo. Quite frankly, you had 2/3 of Republicans vote for this bill. And really what that indicates is 2/3 of Republicans will do whatever leadership tells them to do.
Well, and I even look, you know, and I'm an armchair sociologist, Bob, and we're visiting with Congressman Bob Gunn. I appreciate your time. I do want to talk about the bill that passed out of the House on the college student loan restrictions that you passed. But I just made an observation this week. Kevin McCarthy gives Marjorie Taylor Greene, who everyone was sort of gobsmacked at how she sort of, you know, left the Freedom Caucus behind and said, no, Kevin McCarthy's great. And the first chance he gets, he gives her a gavel so that she can be laughed at by the whole House when she tries to call for order, because he wanted to make her embarrassed for outbursts during the State of the Union. And I'm like, my gosh. And this is what we do to each other. And I hope, you know, Congresswoman Green has realized what she's doing with, and she's back in the fold at some point, because there are a lot of listeners who are like, hey, who is this that looks like Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia?
It's interesting to watch who is lined up supporting the leadership position, supporting the bill of this past week, versus those who are truly speaking the truth.
And I apologize
for the things that they ran on.
I realized I was putting you in a spot where I was implicitly asking you to take a side against another member, and I shouldn't have done that. That was bad.
Well, I
will
resist any comment on that member, except to say we have been on different positions for the last 6 months, and
I hope she,
that was true again this week.
I hope she realizes what's
happening.
But
our student loan bill,
yes.
I will say, hey, we're encouraged by that. We got a bipartisan vote out of the House on that. Every Republican voted to overturn Biden. The bill that I sponsored, that we got a vote on the House floor last week, every Republican voted for it, and 2 or 3 Democrats in the House. And then it went to the Senate, where every Republican voted for it in the Senate. And we got 3 Democrats in the Senate, Sinema, Manchin, and Tester, maybe because of the 2024 election.
Yeah,
but so now it goes to Biden's desk with bipartisan support in both houses. So will Joe Biden go against the bipartisan will of both houses of Congress? Will he veto it? He knows he doesn't have the constitutional authority for it. The Supreme Court is likely to overturn it or to rule that it's unconstitutional also. But it'll be interesting to see what the president's action is on that.
Well, congratulations on getting that, and we'll keep an eye on what the president says about it as the time goes on, Bob. But I appreciate it and everything you do for us, and you keep up the good work. And people back here have your six, and I appreciate it, and I hope you can have a great weekend. And when you get back to the district, things start to turn the other way.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate what you do. Have a great weekend, my friend.
The only social media app that doesn't tell you what the Chinese government wants you to hear. Or the FBI, either.
The coercive power of government.
Download the free Seville 1075 app. Surveillance mics sold separately.